following segment is a paid commercial program by Christensen CPAs and Consultants. It's time for Ask the Expert on News Talk 1340 and 96.3 FM, KWLM.
And we welcome into our studio. We have two experts with Christensen and Associates, and Joel Gratz joins us. And Joel, I see today that the FBI released its first 10 most wanted list.
This seems a little strange that you're suggesting that now when I'm on the radio. Did I make the list?
No, you were luckily weren't born yet, so you couldn't have been on that one.
Okay, good. How you doing, Bill?
Real good, Joel. Always good to see you. And yeah. You've been doing a great job of bringing in your cohorts with the firm. And
yeah, you know, when you're blessed with awesome teammates, that's what you want to do. And today is no exception. My partner, Carrie Butenhoff, I believe she's been on the radio before.
Yep.
She's very specialized and has a really neat niche in our office, and it's something that's starting to kind of actually hit our ag sector. And it's, you know, we've got ethanol plants here in our area, and I know I've never fully maybe explained what that really is. And you hear all these terms about renewable fuels and RINs and LCFS, and that's about as far as my acronyms probably get for Carrie. But she's probably the leading consultant in this sector, the carbon sequestration.
Right.
All these things, and it's like, well, does that really matter to us out here in, you know, rural Minnesota? And I think Carrie's going to tell us it really does, and why it's being done, and why and what the benefits are, not only for the consumer, but also for the companies doing that, whatnot. So that was a long intro, Carrie. Sorry.
All good. Yeah. So I work primarily with low carbon, and not a lot of people know what that is. We see a lot of the net zero commercials, right? So Amazon and Walmart and all those big folks want to be net zero carbon. And what does that mean? So we are trying to get those emissions out of the atmosphere. They're not healthy, of course. And so that's primarily where we're aimed at. I focus in the renewable fuel space, and so we are focused in the transportation sector and trying to decarbonize transportation. Again, what does that mean?
So good question.
When we go to the pump and we see, you know, all these options, E10, right. E15, E85, and all this stuff, that's how much low carbon fuels is going into the gasoline we're putting in our vehicle. And what I'm doing is looking at the carbon emissions of that. So when we talk about low carbon programs, we are talking about how much carbon a product emits from what we say cradle to grave. So we are literally looking at agriculture. So ethanol is a prime example, right? We burn it in our own vehicles. It's agriculture here. So we'll use that as our example. So we are looking at emissions, carbon emissions on the farm to actually grow the corn, the emissions to move the corn from the field to the ethanol facility, the emissions from the actual facility to create the ethanol, and then any emissions to ship it to its final destination. And then also the emissions to actually burn it in our vehicle. So literally from growing of the corn in the field all the way to burning it in our own vehicles as we're driving down the road, we're tracking all of that and auditing all of that information to determine how much carbon is actually being emitted and to find places where we can reduce the amount of carbon that's being emitted.
So why would someone want to be audited, or what is the purpose of providing some kind of report or, sorry, that's a leading question. I'm sorry, Bill.
No, that's good. You know what you know the subject. So.
Yeah, so how does that tie together?
Yeah, so there's programs. So California's been the lead in the low carbon space, and they created a low carbon fuel standard. So they have set goals to reduce the carbon emissions within California, and the LCFS, the low carbon fuel standards, actually aimed specifically at transportation. They have other programs as well that aim at industrial emissions and things of that nature, but where we're focused is that transportation sector. And so there are credits and premiums for people that are shipping that direction to get additional money for their product for those carbon savings, which is helping the state then meet its carbon reduction goals.
So. Does some of our ethanol produced in our plants, does it get shipped to California, or quite a bit of it even?
It most definitely does. So mm-hmm. People that have low CI scores, they are shipping.
Carbon intensity, right? CI?
Yes, thank you. Yep. I talk in acronyms, thank you.
Yeah.
the carbon intensity, so that how much carbon emissions the fuel is emitting, that gives a score. So people with low enough CI scores will send the bulk of the fuel from the ethanol plant out west to where these programs are at. So we don't have any of those programs in the Midwest right now. They've been focused on the West Coast. So California is the main leader. Oregon, Washington, British Columbia up into Canada all have programs. So a lot of our fuel, we usually say about Mississippi River West is where it's effective with enough premiums to send the fuel out that direction. So there's a lot of our fuel and a lot of our plants in that region that are sending west.
Is most of the ethanol produced in the upper Midwest? Would you say?
Yes.
For sure.
In the United States anyway?
For sure. Closest to the corn, it's the most effective. Mm-hmm. But there are plants outside of the band, but they usually have some other niches that they use or other feedstocks besides corn to do that, right, Carrie?
Correct. Yep. Yeah. And they have some other, for the co-products, you know, you get distiller's grains that goes back into cattle feed and stuff. So if they're in a cattle area, you know, they'll send a lot of those there without drying the grains, which is more carbon savings. But
Right. Yep. So California, the biggest consumer probably in the nation, mm-hmm. has the least amount of ethanol locally produced.
Yep.
So we have to get it from A to B. And I think in Minnesota, a lot goes west, for sure. A lot stays in the Midwest, too. Mm-hmm. And if you start getting to Wisconsin, Chicago, that goes east coast, right? So there's kind of a divide and where all that goes. But, yeah, for the stuff you see here, you'd be surprised how much, you know, actually heads off west.
Now, it sounds like it won't be for sure unless you get a waiver till 2025 that E... 15 will be available year-round. And is the reason for that that it isn't in the summer, that it does have more emission then when it's burning it in the summer, or because of the weather?
It's the reed vapor pressure, so I don't want to get technical, super technical, but there's some difference in emissions in the summer. There's arguments that that's in some flaws in the testing even, mm-hmm. as well, which is why they're pushing for the waiver. We've had a waiver for the last, I don't know how many years that we've been able to have it in the summer. They're working on getting a temporary one again as well, but also getting that permanent one in place. So we'll see, you know, come May, June, if...
And that makes quite a difference, that extra 5%, I mean, doesn't it? I mean, when you think of how many gallons, and I think these blender pumps too, hasn't Minnesota been kind of on the forefront for that?
We've always been on the forefront of that, I would say. South Dakota, North Dakota, you know, but Minnesota for sure.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. We have a lot of the facilities here, so it's easier to send it here and do those higher blends here in the Midwest where the plants are located. So
The main value is to the seller of the fuel to, once we audit them and prove out that they have a CI score of X or Y, whatever it might be, they provide our documentation to support that when they sell it, so that they get this additional premium to do that. And that's the value add, right?
Yep.
Carrie, for the consumer, besides obviously something better for the environment, I'm not trying to take that away, but economically, that's the value of what and why it's worthwhile to be part of the program.
And a requirement, even. So, I mean,
value, it is a requirement,
yes,
now that you say
it
that.
But it's a mandatory requirement, like an audit for a loan or something, right?
Yeah.
So those carbon scores have to be audited with the amount of premium that goes with them. And as far as our audits go, I did check some of our stats. Kind of interesting that the clients that we serve, that we audit and help stay in compliance with the program, all of those plants, ethanol, biodiesel, renewable diesel, biogas, so all of those different types of fuels we serve. And we have kept, probably this year with our client base, we audit enough to equate to about 15.8 million tons of CO2 that we are auditing of low CI fuels, which means that those fuels replacing gasoline and diesel, that the work that we're doing with our client base keeps approximately 3 million cars off the road per year is the equivalent in carbon reductions.
Yeah. Now, there was a story that two of the biodiesel facilities, I think, in Iowa, weren't they closing?
They are.
Yeah. So that's kind of unfortunate. What about, you mentioned, Joel, you mentioned carbon sequestration and also the these, like the pipeline they're talking about, kind of linking the ethanol plants and then, you know, sending the carbon watt to North Dakota, I think it is,
yep,
right?
That's where the ultimate wells, I think they call them, are, right?
Yeah.
The wells.
And then now Dooley's, aren't they in a process now when you talk about like biogas, I suppose that would be, if it's coming off these digesters from the manure of the... So then that's kind of, you know, that's exciting too, isn't it?
Yep.
And, you know,
we collect that here and they clean it up and turn it into a compressed natural gas that can be used for transportation as well. And then also under the renewable fuel standard, so when we're talking RINs, if it's used for heating oil or for heating spaces, that counts for the carbon reductions as well under the federal program. So
There's lots of money on the table right now for carbon sequestration. When is that officially, unless they renew it, when does that legislation end? Is that in 26, 20?
I think it's 3 years and it starts in 2025. So that's just the tax credit. Mm-hmm. But there's still these other low carbon programs connected to it as well. So on top of the, you know, you hear the 45Z or the 45Q and these tax credits that are available, that's a big chunk of money. But you also get to stack these low carbon programs on top of that too for additional premium. So that counts as a carbon reduction, taking it out of the ethanol process or even directly capturing it out of the air and storing it in the ground is a carbon savings in those programs too.
Now, isn't that kind of one of the reasons for the cover crops too? To kind of keep, you know, keep the nitrogen in the soil and also, but with
erosion and the carbon. I mean, there's the emissions, the cradle to the grave is what you had referenced earlier. Yeah. It gets that far back and those kind of practices. I think right now the challenge in agriculture for the producer is what's in it for me as a producer to start tracking this stuff? Because they're not required to yet, right, Carrie?
Correct.
Not that it might not happen, which... That'd be mind-boggling to try to trace all the things you do back to whatever. But the value would be, hopefully they're going to get some additional, like my corn has got a lower CI score than my neighbor's. Mm-hmm. I can prove it through carbon accounting, which our firm can do or will do in the future to help our producers if and when it gets to that point. So it's going to happen. We really think, don't you think, Carrie? I should let you speak to that.
It's coming. The 45Z is looking like it's the first place that's going to allow the farm to come into play. So right now, when we talk cradle to grave in the low carbon programs that are on the West Coast, we use default values. So they've done research on average what the country is doing. It's probably kind of old and outdated, but they're using default values. So there's been talks and arguments about bringing in farm level data to show those lower CIs on that agricultural piece. And the low carbon programs haven't adopted it yet. The 45Z, the tax credit, and IRS working with USDA, sounds like they're going to include some of that farm level data. And so the farmers are preparing for that. There's some software companies out there that are helping them accumulate the proper data to be audited and everything. And we're just waiting on guidance from the IRS to see what the final thing is, the final model is going to look like for demonstrating those carbon scores. So
I know when you were just discussing it that it entered my mind, you know, how were a lot of these values determined, you know, initially? How do they really measure some of these things? And you know, it isn't just pulling numbers out of the sky, I don't think, is it?
Nope, it's all scientific research. So mm-hmm. there's lots of studies, usually through USDA. There's an argon-GREET laboratory that does a lot of the modeling, and so they study carbon emissions in various industries. And so they've done a lot of studies and a lot of research of what that looks like. Keeping up to date with the practices and the things that we're learning is probably difficult, which is why the low carbon models have not been updated necessarily to match current, which is why we're looking for this to be able to provide the data and support each individual farm and what they're doing. So
Well, you mentioned, you know, how many different steps there are, you know.
There's multiple steps.
You know, transportation, if that's changing, you know, say these big locomotives, you know, some of them are actually electric now, I guess.
Which is mind-boggling.
It is. It is, you know, when you think of it. But, I don't know. It's way beyond my grasp. It's why I never took physics or any of these higher math classes, I don't think.
But I think it's here to stay, right? I mean, I think the idea of the greener, cleaner concept is here to stay. And, you know, it's going to take every part of the range of solutions, if it's batteries, if it's, you know, ethanol, biodiesel, you know, we talk about biogas. It's going to take all of it to solve all the problems, because not one fuel has a silver bullet. Yeah. Did you say, Carrie?
Correct. So there's a lot of talk of electric being the solution, right? And we hear all the pushes of getting rid of the internal combustion engine and things like that. But realistically, we don't have the technology there right now to do that. So I don't know that it's going to move that direction. My personal opinion is, you know, electric is part of the solution. Just like you said, we need all of it, but it's not the only solution. So I think we're still going to have to rely, just like you said, Joel, on all the other pieces, the biogas, the hydrogen that's coming, you know, ethanol, biodiesel, renewable diesel, all of it together.
Now, the hydrogen, is that the fuel cell type technology then?
Yep, and they're looking at going, so the methane from the farms that you were talking about, Bill, and then to cleaned up to biogas, and then the biogas to hydrogen after that. So they're taking it another step and cleaning it up more.
Because there was talk, too, that with the wind energy, couldn't they make hydrogen out of that? That's generated from the wind?
That direction, too. Yeah. And the wind and the solar is even part of those CI scores as well, right?
Yes, I didn't mention that. Yes, thank you.
If the ethanol facility can utilize wind and solar rather than natural gas and electricity just from the grid, then that cleans up their CI score and lowers that CI score as well. So that's another way, even at the plant, to look at those energy sources and see what else they can do there.
We talked about California being a front runner on this. Mm-hmm. Minnesota is actually not terribly far behind, right? Isn't there a policy in Minnesota where we have to be
something by 2030 or something?
They're working on legislation. The energy, there's probably, I think there's something else. As far as the transportation, the legislation has not passed yet. So they are working on legislation. Minnesota and Nebraska are probably the two leaders here in the Midwest area. To get one of those programs off the ground. It will include agriculture-specific data when they get that off the ground. That's probably part of what's slowing it down a little bit. There's not a model to follow there. So Minnesota and Nebraska are working on it. So legislation, if we can get that passed, then you have to draft the regulation and the standards that you're going to follow. So it's probably 2 to 3 years out still, if we were to get something passed this year. So
someone way smarter than me has to write this stuff up, right? You know, I mean, it's...
And they maybe won't get it perfect the first time either.
They'll need to
kind of modify things as they go along.
Right. Yeah. We just feel really fortunate to be part of the industry to help with this and to have Carrie and her team with this expertise, which really helps our firm diversify. And we don't have all our eggs in one basket. And if I could, just for a second, sure. I know we're always looking for awesome people. You hear the word audit. It's not a financial audit. Not that there isn't financial aspects, but it's a different way of auditing. And it's actually a different kind of breed of cat for us, where you don't have to be that CPA-like person. Am I saying that right? I should probably let you speak to that.
Yep. We have people on our team from all backgrounds, so we do not staff only accountants. We have sustainability majors. We've had econ majors. We've had all number farmers, agriculture majors that are on the team too, and just having pieces of those industries and that understanding, we can train how to audit and the audit methodologies. So having some of that industry or agriculture knowledge is very helpful for our team as well. I think we are the only team in the firm that's completely remote, maybe Baz. Basically,
Carrie's the only one boots on the ground right now out of Wilmer. Everybody else is dotted across the United States, which is strategic for us.
Yep.
Because we do a lot of site visits as well, correct?
Yep.
So
while you're being carbon smart there too, you're not, you know, wasting a lot of fuel to go visit those sites then.
Thank you. We are a sustainable firm. Awesome. No, we knew that too. But yeah, that's thank you for saying that. So yeah, we're in our firm, this is our what we find to be on our all our opportunities on the horizon. This is by far our biggest one. And this is the one we're going to put as money, resources, time, energy, effort, no pressure, Carrie, on this. And Carrie and my partner Bradley have been the two that have, mainly Carrie, no offense, Bradley, have really driven this. And it's a really special industry. It's a niche. And we're so lucky to have it, not only for our team and their growth, for our, you know, value add to the communities, not only locally and, you know, nationally, regionally. Mm-hmm. Carrie's on the road a lot. She's speaking at conferences, and we have a whole team of people doing that. Jamie Klein, one of our newest partners, is also out traveling around on the sales side. And so we're, as a firm that's, you know, anchored in Wilmer, Minnesota, we do really cool things and special things. And if anybody out there is listening that has a, you know, a son, daughter, grandson, nephew, niece, whatever it might be, that has, you know, desires in the sustainable and want to, you're smiling, Carrie, because, well, Joel's on a roll now because he's going to start selling it. I should let Carrie sell it. But
no,
think about that. It's not just, we're not just a CPA firm. And you can be just a CPA firm and be awesome. But we think we're even more awesome by having that. So I'll stop speaking. And I'll let Carrie, if she has anything she wanted to add to the flavor of that.
Yeah.
No, you're good. I mean, it's great to, you know, the local reach and having people understand what we're doing is fantastic. I still get a lot of questions if I'm busy in tax season. So it's nice to make people aware of the sustainable piece and what we're doing. And it'd be awesome to have somebody else back in the office with me. So local people would be fantastic if they want to come check it out. Definitely mm-hmm. do that.
Yeah. So any questions you have of us, Bill? I know it's a really unique topic.
It is. Yeah. And I think you've really covered a lot of aspects of it, but it probably could even, you know, could be another future program,
yeah.
too, I think, to continue to expand on this.
Yeah. But my goal was just to try to let the listeners know, like, what does that mean? You know, LCFS, low, you know, carbon fuel standard, and California, and now Minnesota, and is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? And, you know, it on the front end, there's investment. As anything, and I think the long run, it's going to be the emissions, of course, and there'll be some value add for folks who are invested in ethanol and folks who grow corn for ethanol plants. And I, you know, I just think it's going to be, it's a thing of the future, and it's going to stay. I don't think it's a whim. I don't think it's I think it's got bipartisan support. I think for the most part, maybe not to the extent of the dollars, but I think the concept is bipartisan. So I think that will probably last the test of time.
Yeah. It's going farther. We're heading into sustainable aviation fuel and right. things like that,
crazy.
Too. So it's
yep.
expanding beyond just the vehicles on the roads.
And there's tremendous demand there for the aviation fuel.
Oh, yeah.
When you think just to take off one of these big jets, how much is consumed in just a few
yep.
minutes, you know?
Yep.
So
yeah, just in a few minutes. Yeah.
yeah.
So, yeah, I would have never guessed when I joined the firm back in 96 when there were 7 employees and we were starting to audit ethanol plants. And it was just an industry to get a value add for the corn growers. That's really where it started. And where we're at today, I would have never guessed. And it's not because of what we did. It's just how the world has evolved mm-hmm. and what is being noted as important now, not just the dollars, not just where I'm delivering my corn, but it's about how I'm raising my corn, who I'm selling my corn to, who then ultimately makes it into ethanol, and who they sell to. I just would have never fathomed it, I'll be honest with you. I just never thought. Sorry, I'm getting all kind of emotional here, but it's amazing what we do every day. I'm not going to lie. It really is, and I'm so proud, and I'm a really small part of that aspect of the company, even though I did do RINs in the beginning of time.
You did.
Way back when. We only did 30-ish of them, and now I think she does 300 or something. But so anyway, sorry, I'm rambling. But.
Yeah. Well, we are out of time, Carrie. Thank you again for coming in. I can see why you go out speaking because you really know your topic and, you do an excellent job of, you know, laying it out. So, and it doesn't sound that easy to do. I mean, there is...
Yeah. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it, right?
That's a good way. And then if people want to go to a website or if, you know, if they are interested maybe in a new career or, you know, getting their career off the ground, how do they reach you guys at Christensen?
Our website's fantastic. I know we have a renewable sector and a career hotspot on there. So, yeah, ChristensenCPA.com or just Google Christensen. I think we're pretty high on the chain there. So
yep.
Our marketing gal, make sure of that. Cece, thank you for that. So, yeah, website, ChristensenCPA.com.
Okay. Joel and Carrie, thanks for stopping in.
Thanks,
yeah,
Bill.
Thanks.